Well, thank you very much, David, and yeah, that was awesome. Thank you very much for going through, and obviously all the work you've done on that was tremendous. Thank you so much. I'm just going to take a pause there. It's so much information, and one of the things when I read through it as well, and obviously opened up for questions, I found with the Book of Judges to me was that when I looked at the last verse of the Book of Judges, it's like one of those Agatha Christie things. You get to the end to find out what happened in the last verse. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone saw as he did see fit. And as David said that, everyone did. There was so much evil, wasn't there? And it was just, it's astonishing. If he gave this to a non-Christian, this book, and he say, read it, I just wonder what they would think. It's just mind-boggling, isn't it? Because I noticed there David actually kept it quite clean, a lot of the stuff, didn't he? He didn't go into all the grisly bits. And it's when you actually read the Book of Judges, you think, really? How could anyone do what you've done? How could you stoop so low? And the other thing that struck me before we take questions is the repeat of the verse. Whereas I'll find an example of it now, when it keeps saying, go through. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. When I read through the Book of Judges, I keep hearing like the writer go, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. It's just a repetitive cycle. As we've heard, that they did the evil, they got themselves in such a mess, this happened, they cried out to God, God gave them a judge, the judge saved them, and they lived in peace for about 40 years, and the next chapter you read, again, the Israelites did the evil in the eyes of the Lord. You think, as a writer, it's just a massive cycle. So that's what I've taken out of the book. Thank you, David. So shall we open up to the floor and see what comments? I've got a microphone somewhere. Has anyone got any questions or any points? Or are we all taking it in? Oh, let's hand the microphone over here first.
Right. It seems to me that the last chapters, 17 to 21, although they're at the end of the book, they're actually describing events much earlier. Because obviously, at the end of the book, it looks like Dan are trying to find their homeland, but earlier in the book, they're settled. So it looks like it's kind of... I don't know quite why the writer has done that, but obviously in a lot of the Old Testament books you get this mixed up chronology thing. You can't assume that things happen one after the other just because they're written in that order. So would I be right in thinking that those are talking about things that happened earlier rather than at that point? David? You have a mic.
Okay, yeah, sure. Right, not sure is the honest answer, but we do know that the tribe of Dan were by the coast in Deborah's time because Deborah wants to know in her worship song why Dan stayed on their ships. Now, the city of Dan, which did actually exist, it's been found, and it's being excavated quite a lot. One historian is always digging there because he wants to find the golden calf Jeroboam made. I don't know why he'd want to do that. But the interesting thing is, the city of Dan is nowhere near the coast. So there's a very good argument to be made that they did take a place of their own. They were dispossessed, and they ended up in Dan up north. But you could be right to say that could mean it happens earlier. I don't think it explains where it is. It looks to me like they've just been thrown together and put in to make a point. You can't use the Book of Judges as an archaeological and historical examination of what Israel took when. But we do know that when Samson was around, the people of Dan weren't based in the city of Dan. It's all a bit confusing, and I'm afraid that the Book of Judges doesn't help you with the historical accuracy of who did what, when, where, and why.
A couple of things on that. actually brought my Scofield Bible on me tonight, and it actually says the point here. It says, after the death of Samson, chronological sequence in Judges ends. It's not possible to assign the events of the last five chapters to any particular period. And it just says here that it shows about how the Israelites go into utter apostasy and how it and goes into the civil war. So it doesn't actually give a timing here. And the other thing David was saying about when you look through Judges and you look at the times, I think it's peace then for 30 years, rule for 40 years. If you actually add up all the years together, it doesn't actually fit into history. I think when they've tried to do a timeline, they found actually when you add all the years up, it doesn't sort of fit into the timeline. So it could be a bit shaved off. It's actually saying it's not accurate about the timings in the book of Judges, which is quite interesting. Because I think there's a lot of them trying to think of the word. There's a lot. They round stuff up, don't they, tend to, in the Bible as well.
I just add the book of Judges isn't there for its historical accuracy. As we've already said, Samson couldn't have killed 3,000 people when he yanked the, when he quite literally manages to bring the house down. The story of the king as well, is that, was he really that fat? Probably not. But it's all there just to make a point. And to make that point, they use legends, they use fiction, and they use history.
Yeah, I think we've covered before a few times, haven't we, that in the Old Testament, numbers are more symbolic than exact. And therefore, it's dangerous to try and use numbers as we would use them nowadays as an arithmetical exact figure.
I think we can say that Samson did kill a lot of people, though. So I think there's one of the comments, and he killed more people on his death than he did throughout his life. And that's quite clear from whoever wrote the Judges. We don't know who wrote the Judges as well, do we? We haven't. Is that right, David? We haven't actually.
We just know that he took out a large number of people. It says he killed more people when he died than he did when he was alive, which is very possible. Whether he really did kill 1,000 men with a donkey's jawbone and
that's good going.
Yeah, so on, all the rest of it, I doubt that's true. We could go into that for ages, but I think the honest answer is we don't know, but it's important to look at these things as a symbol and to show he won a victory rather than he killed X number of people because we counted.
And the other point, do we know who wrote the book of Judges?
Pardon?
Do we know who wrote the book of Judges?
No one knows at all. It's one of those books where no one has any idea who the narrator is.
Any other questions? Oh, I'll let you walk.
I just want to say thank you to David. That was an amazing sort of 30 minutes of praise of Judges. You did very well. It's very good. Thank you very much. As we sat here listening. But what I want to ask some questions. Being the evangelist that I am, or I seek to be, we get asked questions out in the street. Why do you believe a Bible that has all this blood and gore in it? Why does God include this in his canon of scripture? Why, you know, if this is God's word, and all these questions come up, you know, God can't be the God, he can't be God, he's done such terrible things, allows such terrible things to go on, etc., etc. So, pose some answers to these questions for those people that we meet on the street.
Do you want to go first, David?
I'd say the real question is, what kind of question are they asking? If they're just asking you that kind of question because they want an argument, then it's not worth trying to justify the killing that takes place in the Book of Judges. I mean, I really think the problem we have with this, as I tried to highlight briefly when I was talking about it, was that we're looking at a time where everything was different. The moral code was different. The lifestyle was different. The places were different. It's 2,000 years ago. It's like saying, how can you admire Genghis Khan because he was a horrible, bloodthirsty, killing brute? Or how can you admire Julius Caesar because of what he did to Gaul? If you tried to read Genghis Khan, the Human Rights Act, he'd probably kill you before you'd even got halfway through. He wouldn't understand what you were talking about. we can't really apply the morals of today to Old Testament biblical Old Testament biblical history any more than we can try to apply the Geneva Convention to Genghis Khan or Julius Caesar. It's just, you just can't do that with it. And do be aware of people who are just asking that question because they want to argue with you or make you look silly. They're not worth talking to, really. Not in that way.
I think something I met for Open Church, is a question I've come up against quite often, is how can we as Christians believe in a God who has done so much in the Bible, done so much killing and overseen so much, as Michael says. And I think one of the things for me in my reading is that I think as a church we've lost sight of this awesome and angry God. I think there's a book I saw recently, Whatever Happened to an Angry God? Because in my view that we seem to be so much which is right, and we say to people that God is a loving God. Of course he's a loving God. He's the most, he is the creator of love. He's just love. And then we need to remember as well that God is, can be a dangerous God. He's done so much, not just in the book of Judges, but if you look back all the armies that the Israelites fight against, and you think that one day that God will judge everyone, and if we don't believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, those people will be sent to hell, eternal damnation. So I know that people don't like me when I suddenly become a fire and brimstone person, but I think it's almost showing that, you know, God is holy, God is perfect, God sets down laws for the Israelites to obey. And then clearly in part of when they went to the Promised Land, they didn't drive out the Canaanites. That's what God told them to do. And therefore, they had to be driven out. And I was watching a video about this yesterday, and part of where Israel is, where you get Israel, you basically had one road. You had the high road going across, and you had the top of the country, another road, where they were hemmed in. And one of the theories is that Israel was in a perfect place to preach to Egypt, preach to the Philistines, preach to the countries around, and God, that centre place, he wanted to spread his gospel out. And I think where the Israelites ignored God, and when these foreign gods, when the Baals all came in and all the foreign stuff, that wasn't happening. So I think God drove out all these people, which the Philistines didn't do. So I think we can't lose sight of that God is just, pure and holy, and he will do whatever it takes to punish sin. That's my view, and I'm sorry if I stand a bit fire and brimstone, but that's where I stand.
I think the other thing is that God meets everybody where they are. He meets people in the culture that they're in. So that is how the culture was, how it worked. And if you always come back to this point of free will, if we have free will, then God isn't going to do strange miracles that kind of work against how life works. It's a bit of a giveaway. You don't have faith if God proves himself by just, I don't know, clearing out all these other people to give room for his people with nobody getting hurt. It's just not how life worked. And God works in the world as it is.
I mean, I just add, if we look at the book of Judges, I mean, don't you think God would have been within his rights to say to the people of Israel, as he almost did in the story of Jephthah, right, that's it, I am done with you lot. I've seen the way you're behaving, I've seen what you've just done, I've seen that civil war, I'm finished with you, I'm going to find someone else. But he doesn't. People often try to say that the God of the Old Testament is this horrible, judgmental God. But if you actually look at stories like that, he saves Israel because he can't bear to see them in despair. That is not a vindictive, horrible God.
One thing I was thinking, because you were saying we have to look at it a different, because they were different times, that reminded me of some of the practices that some of the people they were fighting actually go into. For example, if you look at some of the if you look at Leviticus or Deuteronomy, it talks about horrible things that Canaanites and others were doing to each other. It wouldn't have worked to try and persuade them that what they were doing was wrong. In that time, they would have had to fight them in order to try and stop those sorts of practices that God found abominable and that we find abominable and that we should find abominable.
I think that's right as well, because we're told in the New Testament, aren't we, where there's the, by the Apostle Paul, when we've got the unbeliever in our midst, or the person who, like the false prophet who comes into the church, well, we're told not to have anything to do with them. We're told not even to let them in the church. We need to send them away. So I think that's right. I think God has got rid of these tribes, the Canaanites, the Moabites, due to their false religions, and that was to try and keep Israel pure, because as long as you look at Solomon's later life, when he fell in with the false gods as well, that's because he liked all these women he shouldn't have been involved with, and it taints God's people. And today, you think of our country now, I think part of the judges is because leadership was so poor in the judges. There's no defined leader and people fell away. And I think, look at the Christian church now. And the other thing, speak of in the judges, is that because it went on to generations, the generations forgot what God had done for them previously. And I think, up for debate, do you think we see it in the country now when we've forgotten how God has spared this country through the Second World War, potentially giving us a great victory, the Allies a great victory over the, obviously, the Germans and Nazi Germany, when God has spared this country? Even before that, the great, obviously, the Reformation through Germany, through Europe, gaining the Second World War, through trying to think of other evil times where God has spared us, and we forgot, and we just came back to our evil ways. I don't know what people think about that.
You have to be careful about that. I will let other people comment, I promise, but I'm just going to say, you have to be really careful about making comparisons between what happened in the book of Judges and what happened in our country today. If you're not careful with that, you start somehow trying to argue that God has a special place for the UK. And I don't think you can prove that. And essentially, I think that often when people hearken back to the good old days, all the history I've studied has taught me you're actually hearkening back to something that didn't really exist. You might as well try looking for King Arthur in the Round Table.
Fair point, yes. But I think when you have the Welsh and the Welsh Revival and stuff, and you look at the country now, I think there's, we forget, don't we, what I'm trying to, probably my point is, we forget what God has done, we forget the miracles God has done through the Bible, perhaps, and I think the whole country here, not just in the UK, but the whole world then, America, wherever else, we've just forgotten about God, haven't we? We're just not, yeah, that's my point. Anyone else got anything? Blank faces, hard-hitting stuff. Thank you very much. There's nothing else. Thank you for... What are we doing next month, David? What have we got?
Right.